today is was listed on the board as politics versus civil disobedience versus apathy. And what I meant by that is to discuss the means of political change. If you see some wrong, some injustice, something you think ought to be changed, and you find government not responsive to your concerns, how do you achieve that goal? How do you get to see your end result that you want? By background, for those who have attended my other talks, it's repetitious, but briefly, I'm a state senator from Minnesota, newly elected last year. I'm not new to the government political process. I worked in Washington for U.S. Congress for a year and for 4 years for the Minnesota legislature. So I've been involved in the field a long time. This is my first year as an elected official. I'm a member of the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor, or DFL, party, which is corresponds to the Democratic Party nationally. And like all of you, a concerned Christian trying to relate my own faith to the political process. The format today, I'm going to try something which, given my poor handwriting, is a little bit risky, but I'm going to try and use this by working off brainstorming. Take all of your ideas. I'm going to ask you for ideas in a few minutes on how we can impact, how we can produce political change. And then I'd like to discuss political change a few minutes and then go back to that brainstorm list and evaluate those. How have they been used historically? Why are they likely to be effective or ineffective? Then a brief summary and then discussion of the anything else related to it you are interested in. And in order to help facilitate the brainstorming, I'd like to pick two issues, not for purposes of spending a lot of time on either of those two issues, but plug those in as two issues we can give maybe relate some of the examples to. Don't have to stick closely to these, and I don't intend to make these the focus of the discussion, whether it's appropriate that we ought to be moving this way or inappropriate. They're simply for example purposes. And the two issues I picked was one, the nuclear arms race. There was a film the other night about Ruth Young Dong Nelson, and we had a discussion on this sort of topic afterwards, and I see a number of people who were here for that. So I decided that would be a good issue at the federal level to pick out. And at the state issue I decided to pick out would be related to child welfare. Somebody mentioned child care yesterday, health care, nutrition, that sort of concern. And as a matter of brief background on those two issues, nuclear arms race, I think all of us agree it's out of control. I think everybody of every political philosophy thinks it's out of control, yet it seems to keep getting worse and worse every year. Just for example, the Trident submarines that they were talking about in the Ruth Young Dong Nelson film, one of those has the explosive power of three times the total explosive force of all of World War II. That includes the firebombing of Dresden, the nuclear weapons in Japan, every bomb dropped over every city in Europe and around the world, and all of World War II by all sides together. One submarine has the explosive force of three times that much. The total world explosive power in nuclear weapons, of which better than 95% is in our hands and the Soviet Union's hands, very roughly equal. They have advantage in some areas, we do in others, but between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, we have the explosive capability for every person on Earth, the 5 billion people on Earth. We have equivalent of about 6,000 to 7,000 pounds of TNT in nuclear force for each one of us. So if you took our stockpile and could make sure those weapons dropped on each person's head and divided it up just right, that's the equivalent you could... It's the same thing as if you had 7,000 pounds of dynamite for every person on Earth. And clearly we don't need that. The purpose of it, On the other hand, is we don't trust that they might not blow up our weapons before we can get them off. And anyhow, the more weapons we have, when we have that kind of explosive force, just one submarine going crazy, computer error isn't likely because there are so many safeguards, but there's so many of them that just one of them going crazy and we have the end of the world. So because of that, I think it's an area a lot of people have been concerned about and very frustrated about. So that's the issue I'm picking at the federal level. At the state level, I'm picking the issue of child welfare. Don't want to get into all the issues of welfare reform and so on today, but children, I think we see is people who are think there are lots of cheats on welfare and it's a waste of money and so on. I don't think anybody thinks that kids who are on welfare are cheats or whatever. We don't expect kids to be earning their living. We expect kids to be growing up, to be learning, to be preparing for someday when they'll be contributing members of society in perhaps a financial way. But at this time, we see kids as simply people who need care of adults, many times who have one parent, many times who... Well, right now we have 20% of American children are what we consider poor. One out of every five children is poor, to the extent that they go to bed hungry one night or more a month, to the extent that they don't have adequate housing, to the extent they don't have appropriate health care. And when their parents, if they have a single parent who tries to get a job, can't necessarily afford good health care, good child care, and I've seen so many examples myself personally of people where they just leave their kids with some relative they don't trust. It's not a healthy situation. And that's an area where that the federal level issue I'm suggesting kind of result I'd like to see would save money. At the state level, it's an issue that would cost more money, but in my mind, save money in the long run. The federal Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC nutrition program, which is simply milk and high protein foods for pregnant women and early childhood years, infants and early young children. The federal government has done a number of studies which shows that that saves the government, not people involved, but it saves government $3 for every dollar we invest in it. And yet, currently, the program's funded, so only about a third of those needing the WIC program qualifying for it receive benefits because we don't fund it enough. And that, while it's a state issue as well, the WIC program, for instance, is funded at the federal level, and only two or three states supplement the fact that only one third of the need is met. So those are the two issues I was throwing out. If during this brainstorming you have some ideas and they don't directly relate to either of those two issues, throw them out anyway. I want to see how big of a list we can get. And to start us out with that, go back to the title, Politics versus Civil Disobedience versus Apathy. Each of those is one way we can respond to issues. Politics is, that's a summary title. Politics can mean writing a letter to your congressman, it can mean running for office, it can mean hundreds of things. Civil disobedience can be, like in the Ruth Young Dong Nelson, trying to form a blockade to stop the Trident submarine from coming into port. Or it can mean civil rights days. There were, you know what kind of things there were that would fall under the civil disobedience type of category. Breaking the law, appealing to a higher moral law in order to get your point across. And apathy, of course, is the cynical, there's nothing I can do about it. Somebody in another talk apparently this week made a comment about all politicians are corrupt anyway, and if that's the response, once you're at that stage, you're not gonna be changing anything. You've given up hope, and I think we as Christians don't wanna give up hope. We're preaching Christ's love in a hostile world is not expected to be easy, but we're not supposed to give up hope either. So I'm saying, other than apathy, what else is there? And having said politics and civil disobedience, I don't mean those to be things up here, but what kinds of political involvement is there? What kinds of civil disobedience? And I guess I'd like to spend a few minutes now hearing what you have for ideas on that. We don't have to discuss them at length now, but if you want to give an example of what you mean, that's fine too.
Write a letter.
Write a letter to?
Congress.
Public officials? Okay. Somebody else?
Get out and vote.
Vote. Okay.
Demonstrations?
Demonstrations. Can you give an example of a type of...
Well, to be more very specific, Erica Boza and Honeywell in Minneapolis.
Okay. For those who aren't familiar with... it's my home state and very familiar with it. There's a group called the Honeywell Project, which is protesting very much the arms race. And their approach is Honeywell, which is one of the largest defense contractors. Specifically, they make a number of parts of some anti-personnel weapons that tend to kill lots of civilians in most wartime situations. And the protest against Honeywell is they shouldn't be going after the government contract. So three or four times a year, the group goes and blockades the Honeywell corporate headquarter entrances. That's a good example of a demonstration, yes.
Telephone your legislatures.
Okay.
Express your views on whatever bills are.
Okay, I'm gonna put that up here. Letter or phone calls to public officials.
Take them out to lunch on their off season.
Take them out to lunch. That's the general public doesn't do that a lot. The lobbyists, it's incredible.
That's why we need to do it.
Exactly. It's incredible how many invitations one gets during the legislative session when the peak season of it is for myself. If I wanted to, I could eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner with somebody else's expense. Certainly all 5 weekdays. Breakfast might be a little bit tougher, but every lunch, every dinner, if I wanted to, somebody provide my meal. Quickly learned, though, that even if it's a fancy meal, there's a lot more to life than sitting down with somebody trying to lobby you real intensely while they're doing you a favor. And a lot more fun to eat with your family and friends than with people who are out to convince you of something. So. But that's a good one.
Let's put lobbying down.
Lobbying, okay.
Yes.
I'll put lunch for that one.
No, I said lobbying.
No, I know, I'll put lobbying for yours. Yes, I didn't. Okay, I hope people can sort of read these.
Because letter writing is also lobbying.
That's a type of lobbying, yes.
Yes.
Lobbying, in that case, you're meaning more coming in person, and in other words, not just contacting them by phone or mail, but stopping by to express your views.
And the
all of the above.
Okay.
And the organized one with funding, the money that goes with lobbying. To
okay.
Support.
Financial support for candidates or for public officials.
Yeah.
Contributions, I'm missing.
Contributions.
Okay. I think you were suggesting a slightly different one, namely funding organizations that do lobbying.
Yeah, or work for certain things like funding that project.
Okay.
Decisions for social responsibility and loyalty, and I mean, there are dozens of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So, contributions to lobbying organizations, it's called. And that brings up the other thing. I mean, a lot of these things are things you as an individual do, this is one that you're doing as a group.
Oh, I was thinking of boycotting, for example, Nestle's products,
okay.
Pushed for sale in third world countries, and they didn't educate the people of how they should be used.
Okay, right. Yes, boycotting is an economic tool, in effect. That's the first of those where you're not going, that's one where you're not going directly at the government, but you're going at some corporate group that may be government can affect, but you may be trying to affect the organization directly. I can't offhand think if there are any cases where you might boycott some action of government, but maybe somebody else can.
the formation of political action committees of PAC.
Okay.
That kind of falls under your...
Contributions to candidates, okay. PACs, group contributions, we'll call it. Not contributions to lobbying group, but group contributions to candidates. Okay.
Precinct volunteerism.
Okay. Volunteering for candidates and parties and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
Okay. Volunteering at precinct level, we'll call it, okay.
Letters to the editor.
That's a new one. Letters to the editor.
Withholding federal income tax, at least until they take us.
Withholding income tax. Okay, that in effect is a form of, that's one and we don't have many. That one, demonstration can be a civil disobedience. That's another form of civil disobedience. People who withhold part of their income tax because the government spends a percentage on the military that they
cannot. I don't think much of that idea.
Okay, well right now we're not trying to evaluate them for whether they're right or wrong or whatever, or even how effective they are. Simply trying to get ideas of what people are doing.
I was wondering about, now this is the pastors connected with DMS in this church in Pittsburgh, East Liberty, which was against the banks and withholding things for the poor.
So in what specific thing of theirs, you're talking about a church action or a...
No, these are...
I know who they are and what some of the things they've been doing, but they've been doing a range of things. Would you be suggesting a protest action against a bank or...
It was against the banks,
okay, so,
and the influential in the city.
So demonstration not directed towards public officials, but directed to private. Okay. That may be... the Honeywell one, maybe what I'm going to do is divide this demonstration both demonstration towards public officials and towards private organizations, we'll just call it, which could mean banks, any kind of organization.
I'm thinking of something that can be done both church and community level is informational meetings, forums, where you have a point of view presented.
Informational forums. That Ruth Youngdahl Nelson film, yes, she was involved in a lot of those.
This may fall under letters to public officials, but what about organized letter campaigns where you have massive, like through a church or organization,
where organized
it's a letter writing campaign.
Letter campaign, okay.
Petitions.
Similar kind of thing.
Regarding petitions, are they something that you really pay attention to, where it's a form letter that...
I will get into that more later, but
okay.
Not necessarily the most effective.
Maybe petitions should be / initiative.
Petition, like initiatives in states that where you can put something on a ballot?
Sure, the state of California, we have 50 initiatives every election.
Okay. I'll call that ballot initiatives. Not every state, like in Minnesota, we do not have that. But it is in existence in almost half the states, I believe, initiatives.
Would you consider it a political decision to greatly increase the percentage of your giving to church and charity, thus reducing the amount of money that you pay in income tax?
You could make the case that that is one way of doing it, charitable contributions. And
or people who voluntarily keep their income below taxable level.
Okay, we'll put that in falling somewhere between the withholding income tax and charitable contributions. Other thing charitable contributions do is the groups you're doing it to, presumably some of them may be working for the same kind of concerns you're looking for.
Compete with government.
Compete.
That's what you're doing there is you're competing with government by providing alternative sources.
Yes.
If you have someone who's apathetic, they're likely to withdraw totally, go out,
do nothing.
Yes.
Yes. That I don't want to put that down here because I see that is sort of the opposite of all of these things. Mm-hmm. These are designed to get a result. Somebody who's apathetic is written off the whole system. They're not trying to influence it because it's worthless. I've had people who, when campaigning, a politician, you're all a bunch of crooks, and they slam the door in your face. Well, don't you even want to hear anything about what I have to say? And no, they don't. They've written off the whole system already.
But they're a problem to deal with.
Right. I'm not saying that they're not a major factor in American society. There are a lot of apathetic people. Some of you, well, presumably the fact that you came to the forum meant you weren't apathetic, but there are a large number of people who are that way. I'm not saying that it's not a factor. I'm saying if somebody wants to change something, how do we do it? And I'm saying that's the opposite of trying to change. That's giving up. But I agree. Would be sort of apathy versus this. That's what I'm trying to make as a point.
One thing I don't think has been mentioned exactly there, but that we've done in our neighborhood, which has been a real good thing, is that it's just a small neighborhood within the city, and a group of people interested in peace issues decided to get together on a regular, like a monthly basis, and discuss the peace issues, and discuss what they could do at a neighborhood level about these issues. And then some of the things that the group, it was sort of an educational process, much as things here at Holden are. And then some of the things they did were like put on a seminar for the teenagers in the neighborhood relating to the nuclear issue, that is education. And the other thing they did was write a collective letter, a group letter to the newspaper, kind of a viewpoint, which was very interesting.
So a group, a lot of the things you're saying are fine, letters to the editor, it's in effect a group way, educational, informational forums. So a lot of things you're saying are in there. The one thing that you're touching on that a number of these things do imply is education of the public.
There's a key viewpoint is that they're the smaller units, within your neighborhood.
Stress the local.
And develop it as a... And the thing about the newspaper article, which was interesting, is that this was clearly an article from a group of people who were diverse in age and interests and not necessarily labeled as, radical backgrounds. So hopefully you could bring other people into that.
Newspaper editorial, I mean, that's not exactly the word for it.
So, sure. Well, I have a thing called a viewpoint article.
Yeah, viewpoint, whatever, okay.
Could you call it a support group?
Support group. I'm not trying to say that that's not a better way of phrasing here. I can erase this if people. I just want to make sure we all understand that. Okay, we're talking about maybe a support group. It would be local in nature. Its purpose would be to inform members of the group, keep them posted, inform others, public opinion shaping type of thing, educational type of thing. And we're coming up among these, I want to wrap this up in a second, but we're coming among, I see a number of types of divisions. A lot of these, we did talk both about the individual letters and the group letters. A lot of ideas here are group ideas. The group contributions, the candidates, the individual contributions. That's one division I'm seeing among these things. Another one is who you're trying to influence, some of whom are the public officials, some of whom are the public, and then there's another one where it's, in effect, the third kind of thing is, division would be going through the governmental process, the traditional governmental process, others, like perhaps the Honeywell Project, and so on, and DMS, they're trying to change not government, but perhaps the political system by going through private sector, or one other alternative, the ballot initiative, which is in effect, an alternative form of changing the political system. Does anybody else have any more suggestions in here?
Corporate prayer.
Corporate prayer. Whoops. Presumably often by support groups who share similar concerns.
I was thinking the public gathering of worship. Public. That's what I meant.
Okay.
Good. Governmental and political affairs are afraid about.
That is a good one, and that's one other thing that maybe we could use a couple more ideas in, ways in which the church, ways we as Christians specifically in our Christianity might be involved. Any other suggestions there?
Well, a lot of the social statements, ways that the church develops guidelines.
Church statements. Which, of course, depending on the issue, you can have a lot of controversy on, and it's a question then, do you do them or do you not try them, and who does them, and so on.
Not exactly related, but if we're talking about welfare for kids, a very helpful aspect is volunteering at a youth center of some sort as a way you might not be able to spend as much time making money, therefore you don't have as much money to pay for taxes.
That was kind of,
really, yeah. You want to get really abstract, but just the volunteering actually helping the system despite the fact that there's not enough money going into the system.
That fit in somewhat, the last part of what you were saying was, yeah, that making charitable contributions, volunteering your time for those things, and that also fits into, somebody said, competing with government. If you don't like the way government is responding to something, compete with it. Government's not addressing child care adequately, so therefore you're going to try and do it there. Maybe one other thing like that, we had a discussion yesterday about what's the role of government as opposed to what might be more appropriately private sector role. And I was suggesting that the church never has taken care of, through all history, has never taken care of adequately the poor and needy. So saying government should get out of the business and leave it to the church means it won't get done. But nevertheless, that is, the church has a role there and the church can help out. And we'll leave that all under the volunteering category. I had the idea of leafleting, which is similar to a number of these things in public education. Informational forms, I had speaking and writing. Somebody's mentioned writing. Some speaking is something that you kind of do in educational forums. Another one, organizing, trying to get organizational support for a position. Endorsements, that may fall under the church statement idea. Getting more groups to, I'll put down that idea of endorsements for a position yet, because that's slightly different than I think what I've heard. Any other? Running for office is one other one I'm going to put down there. Or, which I think goes along with this volunteering at the precinct level. I mean, that's one, you're volunteering for somebody else, two, you're volunteering to do it yourself. Any other final suggestions in this area? I think we have a pretty good all-around list.
Well, I was going to say, just individual prayer. You mentioned corporate prayer. It really stopped me in my tracks, because I was just, we start thinking about all the things that we can do, and forgetting, you know, the power that God has, and, you know, remembering to pray about these, and that really opens up a lot of things when you turn it over to the Lord.
That's, yes, we don't have to organize a group, you don't have to wait for Vespers, you don't have to come to Holden Village to pray about concerns. It's something we all can do 24 hours a day. That's a very good suggestion to close them with. So I will close them there, and we'll get back to them in a couple minutes. Wanted to briefly discuss the political change process, and therefore give a little background for evaluating all of these suggestions. This is somewhat obvious, and you all know this, but because we forget the end result of what we're, or how we're trying to accomplish what we want to accomplish, I want to go over this anyhow. What I mean by that confused statement was, we sometimes see, hey, we want to, one of my two examples, we want to stop the arms race. We feel very strongly about it. What can we do? So, okay, let's go out and protest. How do we protest? What's the purpose of the protest? To educate the public, educate public officials, educate whom? Or draw attention to it, or draw attention away from it, or what? And therefore, just a reminder again that our government, both at state and federal level, there are three, or maybe at state level, four ways we can change things. One is through the courts. You don't like something, you file a lawsuit to try and pursue it. Most of us, that's beyond our capability because it costs money simply to take something to court, and organized groups do. Somebody was talking about the Christic Institute lawsuit, which there's apparently a film on it tonight, I think I've heard. Haven't seen the film, don't know much about it, but that's a case of a group that feels strongly about something going to court to try and change it. Another one is through administrative system, and on very specific issues, and you tend to find out who's making the decisions in an administrative level, either through the state level governor's office or federal level through the presidency and the administration. But for most of the kinds of issues we're interested in here, you're going to be more interested in the legislative kind of change, or at the state level, whoever suggested, I think, the initiative, ballot initiative type of change. And in as far as the legislative process, what you have is most states, two legislative bodies and the governor, all of whom have to endorse the idea. And the federal level, both houses of Congress and the president all have to endorse the idea. And it won't do you any good to convince a majority of the public something is the case. That's not the way the system works. I mean, if there's some connection between, if there's widespread public support for a position and therefore action that's going to yield the result you're looking for. So education of the public, for instance, does indirectly have an impact, but it is not a direct tie. You can convince 90% of the people to favor something. If you can't get it through the legislative process, it's a waste of time. Sure, go ahead.
I'm surprised to hear you making that statement. As representatives of the people, mm-hmm. how could 90% of the people feel one way and the legislative process wind up with something quite different?
I would say, well, 90% may be a stronger number. Let's say 60%, which most issues are probably 60-40 one way or another. And it's just a simple fact that it does happen. And perhaps the best explanation is, at the federal level, I'm sure it's more than that, but in our state legislature meeting less than half the year, over 2,000 votes a year to cast. And therefore, you cannot elect people who are going to represent your point of view on all 2,000 issues. And each of your neighbors cannot, and therefore you pick your most important issues, elect people who sympathize with you on those most important issues. If you take a poll of any issue and then take a bill that we passed last year, and then take a poll of the public, do they support it or oppose it? Half the time, I'll guess the majority is going to support it, half the time a majority isn't. But there's not a there's not a direct connection. There is a strong connection, but not a direct one. If there is widespread public support for something, public officials who are responsible to the electorate for their re-election, for their jobs, are going to listen. Nevertheless, it cannot translate directly one-to-one for, I think there are a number of issues that, I think if you took a public poll on a lot of things, you wouldn't find that directly. And another reason it can't be exactly the same is the public is going to have some contradictory positions that won't wash out. Maybe best example at the state level I can give is if I took a poll of my constituents, 90% would favor lower taxes, 90% would also favor spending more on the public schools. You can't do both. And so public officials cannot, I mean, if I took a poll of my constituents each day on every issue we might be voting on that day, it wouldn't be that helpful because, first of all, it depends how you ask the questions, and it's an impossible informational system. So our representative form of government has to work somewhat on the basis that you're going to elect people who presumably a majority of the people trust their wisdom, their judgment, and so on, and if they're too far out of line, they're going to throw them out of office. But it's a question of what's too far out of line. It's not going to be if you disagree once, you're out of line and so on, but it's a matter of how far off of majority public opinion is going to work. And the system simply cannot, I mean, it's impossible to have in a country our size a direct democracy where every person gets to vote on every issue, which is why we do this. And therefore, I don't mean to be saying that majority opinion doesn't have a strong impact on it, but on the other hand, it's not a direct impact. 55% of the people favoring a position does not mean that's going to become law. The opposite may equally often happen.
Now, President Reagan is a prime example of bringing his message to the people over the Congress. And whether it works or not all the time, you know.
He's been successful sometimes, yes, and not always. Yeah.
Well, we've got a case in point with the Congress to go back to the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing exactly what the people want done, apparently. That is, spend more on federal programs, but don't tax us to support them.
That's exactly a good example.
So we're going into debt year after year after year because the tax level is not consistent with the spending level, and the Congress is the problem. Our representatives are down there. Now, how do we cure a situation like that?
If I had the perfect answers, I could sell them for a fortune.
But you're in the system, you know.
Yes,
how do we get to fellows like you? I know
that's,
you're not at the Fed.
That's what I'm trying to get at through the whole talk. But again, and it's also a matter of politics. I mean, we can argue that President Reagan does not hold to majority opinion on a whole slew of issues, yet he's overwhelmingly elected. And Congress, I mean, people vote for the same election. They will vote for a senator and a president of exact opposite political philosophy, and they'll vote overwhelmingly for both of them. Studying what people's voting patterns is very interesting, but I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I do want to point out that there is not a direct correlation between majority opinion and public law, which for purposes of then how do you influence government, the points I wanted to make is outside of the process is what you want to influence through when you're trying to make political change. The ways you do that are through getting legislation passed, influencing the system to do that, or starting a ballot initiative and lobbying that through. But it's not directly by getting a majority of people to support it. It's not by providing the best arguments, though it doesn't hurt to have better arguments than your opponents. And it's not by what's right. I mean, we would, if it was what's right and we could all agree on what's right, we'd be in good shape.
Maybe it was a slip of the tongue, but mm-hmm. you said something to this effect, that in order to get re-elected, mm-hmm. I have got to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that the crux of the matter, basically the problem? In order to get reelected, I've got to buy votes.
Mm-hmm.
And each one in the Congress goes out and buys votes for his constituents. The total cost of all the votes then mm-hmm. exceeds the amount of money available to pay for those votes.
I would argue as a person very involved in this, because I'm public office holder myself, that there's not such a calculation there are clearly...
I think you used the term, to get reelected, I've got to.
Right, I have to be concerned about what
that's
my constituent wants.
Okay,
well, I want to make it a little bit different than that, because
no,
I wouldn't...
You can't tell me any different. Those politicians are just in there to get reelected.
Okay, well, I would argue that there are a number of times when a politician is going to disagree with their constituents, and therefore they're either going to do what the constituents want if they feel that's going to help them get elected again, or because they feel that's what they ought to do, or they're going to do what they want. So it's either they're selfish, if you're going to look at it, that politicians are all selfish. If that's the attitude you're starting from, they're either selfish in the attitude that they want to get reelected, even if it means selling out their conscience and doing what majority opinion is, or they're selfish in that they're going to, that they want to do what their conscience says, regardless of what the public wants. What I would suggest is that there's every person's, every issue of all these 2,000 issues we consider every year, there are so many factors that influence us. There are the lobbying groups, there are the individual public opinion, there's our own study and research and what you think in your own conscience is right. As I proposed in my first talk, I believe very strongly that if I think this is right and this is wrong, and 60% of my constituents, I think, I don't poll them on every issue, 60% of my constituents disagree with me, and yet I think this is the right position, I'm going to go with my conscience. With my understanding of the American political system being that if I'm too out of touch with them, their job is to vote me out of office next time, and not for me to just cave in and say, I think it's wrong, but well, I want to get reelected because I love my job. And so it depends on your philosophy. If you take a poll of the American people, do they think a politician ought to vote their conscience, or they ought to vote majority public opinion? And you'll have half say one, half say the other. It's a philosophical question about government. All I'm telling you now is, I think, practically speaking, in government office, some people tend to go mainly the way the public wants. Some people plan to go mainly their conscience, and everybody has some sort of fine mix there. We have one member of the legislature who has the nickname of Guts because he doesn't have any, and he has voted for every spending bill and will never vote for a tax bill, and tends to be conveniently absent when people disagree. And I'm not saying that's a good way to do things, but that's what happens. I do want to keep moving on this, but I do want to hope that point is clear, that majority opinion, rightly or wrongly, is not what determines political factors. It's one factor that helps change the political process. Number two, where the best arguments are may help change it, but it doesn't necessarily result in, even if you have overwhelming arguments, if the other side has some more clout for some reason, they're going to win. And number three, what's right? And we got to agree first on what's right. We're running out of time overall, and I want to keep pushing it and stress that one more thing before we get back to the list is that there's slowness in the process. You said earlier, well, what do? They spend more and tax less than they need to balance things, and it's been going on for years. It's escalated very rapidly the last 5, 6, 7 years. It's just skyrocketed. The deficit is three times as great every year as it was in the late 70s. And that's terrible, and how do we change it? It's a very slow-moving process.
And yet there's legislation before the Congress mm-hmm. to put into law a prohibition against doing that.
Mm-hmm. But
now, wouldn't you think that would be automatically passed? I mean, who could possibly argue?
Well,
you know, another important thing, and that is that I've always been taught all my life that you pay your obligations. If I didn't pay my bills in Mount Vernon, Freddie Miller, the bill collector, would be to my door in 5 minutes.
I hear both of your points on that. I'd be happy to discuss that anytime.
Anything you could do to balance that budget, you're doing a great service to this country.
Our state legislature has to work on a balanced budget, so we don't have this problem at our state level. And I'll be happy to address that issue anytime you want, but I'm afraid we won't get through the topic at hand if we get too much involved in any one topic. So before I continue, get back to the brainstorming, I want to give one caution, and that is a lot of the things, one of the things we discussed on Monday night or whenever that Ruth Youngdong Nelson film was on, was the frustration. Somebody could spend 30 years believing deeply that something is right, and government doesn't respond. And therefore, many types of action somebody may do may be more out of frustration than anything else. And the worst kind of frustration can lead to cynicism and, it's hopeless, I give up. And that's the one thing I'm encouraging people not to do, to keep that hope despite the slowness of the process. I got 23 bills in some form or another into law this year. It's a large number. I think they were good things. I'm sure everybody would disagree with one or two of them, but nevertheless, I accomplished a lot that way, but there's some other bills I've had that I'm carrying now that somebody else had carried 10 years ago or 20 years ago, and there's still ideas whose time may never come. It's very slow moving, and yet at the state level, it's about 1,000 times faster than at the federal level. U.S. congressmen may get one bill passed a year, and it's a tremendous record. Not saying quantity is quality, but just saying that process moves very slowly, and to try and change things is very slowly. One of the things you can do, and it comes back to this volunteering at the precinct level, if you don't like who's in office, you vote them out. But that, if somebody's got a six-year U.S. Senate term, and it's their first year of your term, you can't even have any chance of voting them out for 6 years, and they're probably going to get reelected anyway. So it is a slow process. It's a very frustrating one at times, but doing nothing is certainly going to change nothing. It's only by acting that you can change it. So now I'd like to quickly go through these and review. We've talked a little bit historically about where some of these have been used. We won't have time to get into them as much as I like. But I would like to talk about the effectiveness of this, and I'll make some general comments because of the time and encourage you to step in any time. First of all, going down the list of these, the ones that are public education ones, as I said, there's no direct link between majority public opinion and action. I think a majority of the public opposes aid to the Contras. The U.S. government has been doing it on and off over the past few years. But nevertheless, if 80% or 90% of the public favors a position, it's probably going to happen. It's when public opinion on an issue is 60-40, 55-45% type of breakdown, it's not as likely to happen. So let's go first for the types of things that are public education types of things. Church statements, you could argue, is both intended to influence public officials and intended to influence specifically the public at large, and more specifically members of those denominations. The ALC and the LCA both have a process, and I will guess they do one or two issues a year at most that they make a statement on. They'll make one on the death penalty, and it's a long, drawn-out process. Is it has to be, as it ought to be, because of the fact that Lutherans disagree on most issues, and they feel strongly enough about them, they feel they ought to say something because they're issues that the church cares very deeply about. As far as the public opinion goes, you can probably judge as well as me whether church statements impact the public or members of the congregations in particular. I will suggest that that is one minor thing that would influence a public official. And most likely the churches tend to be split on the issues that the churches take stands on, so you could argue that, well, if people who are churches that oppose your church's position are taking stands on it, then you've got to do it just to counterbalance it. But it has some impact. I would argue it's a small kind of impact in the process. Individual and corporate prayer is something I can't say, well, yeah, you pray this much and it becomes a lie. You can't evaluate that kind of thing. That's a matter of we're praying that people's minds be open, their hearts be open to the love of Christ and how we can be compassionate with other humans. I don't know that we can evaluate the effectiveness of it, other than to say that I think we all believe it's a very effective thing, something we ought to be doing as individuals. Newspaper editorials. As far as that informs both public and public officials, I'll suggest you can all decide. I think a lot of people tend to read newspaper, not editorials, but editorial types of articles that the public submits, that columnists write. I tend to find them an interesting part of the newspaper, and I'm sure a number of you do as well. The one case where they have the most impact on the legislature is well-written articles are often distributed in committee hearings. If I see one that really makes the case for a bill I'm presenting, I'll clip it and photocopy it and give it to every member of the committee, and may refer to it specifically in debate. So a well-written newspaper editorial can have an impact. And if you write one and you get published and you think it's a great thing, send it to the level of government that it's related to. If it's dealing with a federal issue, send it to your congressmen and your senators. They may not see it, and they ought to see it. And or if you see somebody else's column that you think is worth doing, send that in. Because it does, I'd say that's a well-written one is one of the few areas where you can provide direct information to a legislator that has an impact. The church statement is not likely going to be read through why we think the death penalty is right or wrong. It's not likely to be read through, and they're always in-depth, careful statements, but a newspaper editorial would be far more likely to be read through carefully and have more of an impact. John, yes?
Can we ask just for a minute, should the church be making political statements? I wonder about that. Should the pastor be using a pulpit to suggest what his political leanings are? Oh no, he wouldn't like that. But if he gets a group together, and a group in the church makes a political statement about the death penalty, capital punishment or whatever it is, that's all right? I don't know. I wonder if the church should be used as a platform for political statements.
I'm going to beg out of that one. I had a whole hour talk on that. I didn't give Wednesday, and I'm planning to give tomorrow on that topic, and I think any brief answer wouldn't do it justice to it. So I'll talk with you individually, or I plan to change the title of my tomorrow's one to go sort of what I was going to talk about
well,
Wednesday.
Then put it in quotation marks on there. At least we don't have to,
Okay, but a number of these things are any of the church, well, that's probably about the only one we have here that's church related.
Church letters tend to be social issues rather than political, if there is a difference.
Well, as long as you stay bland enough,
be hungry.
Okay. Church statements, we will talk about that tomorrow if you're interested in coming. The local groups, forming local groups and educating members of the group and so on. I gather you and a number of people here are members of such local groups. I will argue they can be very effective for informing the public and slowly helping work to change public opinion. As far as contacting a legislator, a letter from a group that may have 30 members or 20 members, I'll argue is not a whole lot more effective than two letters from individual members of the group or two visits from members of the group one-on-one saying, I care about this issue and here's the arguments I have for it. So what I'd argue the value of these things is in the education and starting the things you suggested those local groups do through writing newspaper columns, through writing letters to the editor, through holding informational forums to inform the public. I would argue it's not directly a good way to contact local officials and so on. Petitions would be the same sort of thing. I get a petition, and I can carry a petition around here, and I could carry an opposite position the next day. I could get a ton of signatures on any one of them, simply because when somebody comes to you with a petition, you're often in a hurry, you don't take the time to read it carefully, depending on how they phrase it to you. It doesn't show a real deep commitment on your part that you signed the petition. If you care enough about something, you're going to take the time to write a letter or give a phone call or something of that sort. And accordingly, if there's a return address on the petition, I'm going to write everyone back because it's in my best interest to let them know I saw it and I'm concerned about their opinion. But it's not going to weigh real heavily on me that, wow, 200 people signed this petition. Five letters from individuals who signed that petition would be a lot more meaningful to me, actually. And I think true of politicians in general, though there may be those who, in your terms, are trying to buy votes, who count them up. You know, hey, there are a lot of names here. I got to take that seriously. But I think even they realize to a certain point, anybody can sign a petition without being sure they support it or not. Competing with government, that's one that I think we could spend a whole hour talking about that kind of topic. You can clearly do some of those things, volunteering to do alternatives to what government does. I think we had a long talk about the role of government. Should the church be doing more help for the hungry, or should that be the role of government? That's something, again, as I said, we could spend a whole hour on that, and it's not really one of political change, it's one of non-political change. You're trying to help solve some problem outside of the political process. So it has very real merit, but it's not exactly what we're talking about today. Ballot initiatives is also not, it is a political process system. And many times, I think it's very clear that that's the easier way to get something passed than the legislative process at the state level, and of course at the federal level we don't have that. So in states that do have that, if you can, I've been told in the studies I've seen, Colorado did a study a couple years ago, North Dakota did one, a whole number of states have done these studies of initiative and referendum, and about 99% of the time the side that spends the most money in promoting the position wins. So if you're pushing something on the ballot, the ballot initiative, it's best to make sure your side is going to be able to raise more money. That's not the only thing that influences it, obviously, but statistically in Colorado the last 20 years, every one that decided spent the most money has won. Petitions we talked about, organized letter campaigns, same thing as letters to public officials. I'll argue it's not quantity alone. Form letters we get when, dear representative, fill in the blank, dear senator, fill in the blank, Minnesota capital, St. Paul, that. That takes about as much thought as a petition does, only they got to paste a stamp on it too. And likewise, I figure they have to paste a stamp on it. They care a little bit more about it, but it doesn't inform me any either. I mean, I'll get 200 of them, they all say the same thing. I don't know if 200 people feel that way, but no new information. But if you have 200 people write letters, all of them individually, that can have real impact. You know they care.
Excuse me, Don. In the interest of time, could you give the things that you feel affect you?
Okay. How close are we? We're very close. First of all, I'd argue that changing who the public officials are, running for office, volunteering for somebody, is a slow process. As I said, the U.S. Senate term is 6 years. The president is 4 years. My term is 4 years. If you think I'm doing just awful things, it's going to take forever to get rid of me. But nevertheless, spending your time trying to influence those in office, if they're absolutely opposed to what you want to do, they're not likely to change. If their philosophy is exact opposite of yours, no matter how many letters you write, they're not likely to change on that. Therefore, I would argue the most effective thing to do is do it yourself or put in somebody who agrees with you. And that's the thing where it takes incredible patience, but that I'd say is the most effective. And of course, church groups, organizations trying to say, hey, we want to stop the arms race, we want to do this or that, it's real hard to then go, okay, well, we're going to support this candidate. But then you get into controversial political things. And when the group is already united on the issue, you get into the controversy of political parties and candidates. But nevertheless, I'll argue by far in a way that's the most effective. Group contribution to candidates, individual contributions to candidates, are parts of that. They help influence who's going to win, because money speaks heavily. I beat a candidate who spent a lot more than me, but it helps to have the money. The money tends to win. Then we get to the categories that I'd say are next most important. Voting also is clearly a part of this, though it's a lot smaller one. You influence who's going to win by who you vote for. The next greatest category is the contact. And the more direct the contact, the more information provided, the more thought out it is, the better. That means lobbying, that means phone calls, it means letters, not form letters, but ones that you take the time to write out a position. You explain, even two sentences, I oppose this because it such and such. That tells more than a form letter. I mean, if you have a unique reason, I think you ought to look at this overall picture. And two paragraphs, that means a lot more to me than a form letter 3 pages long. And I think to most public officials. So that influencing those in office through lobbying, through letters to them, through phone calls, through organized phone calls or letter campaigns or lobbying, I would argue that that is the next most effective as far as direct political change. And most of these others are going to fall into, there's one other category here, withholding income tax and charitable contributions that aren't really directly trying to influence it. They're more a protest to what's going on without directly informing, in most cases, those who are making the political decisions. But the informational forms, the letters to the editor, most of the other things we're talking about here are demonstrations, are not directly aimed at the public officials, but they're aimed more at public opinion. And I'd say that's the next step down after contacting the public officials, informing the public and getting the public excited about something. It's not the direct connection, but it's a real connection, as we talked about earlier anyhow. We are out of time. I wanted to get more time for a number of things. I think there are hundreds of things people still would like to discuss, and I'd be happy to stay around now or catch me anytime in the next few days. I'd love to hear your challenges to what I was saying or your thoughts on it as well, but please stop me anytime you want to talk. Okay, thank you for coming.